clear commitment to uplift those around him. The concept of generosity extends beyond mere financial contributions. It encompasses a holistic approach to kindness and compassion. This is reflected in the teachings of the Imams alayhi salam, who emphasize that true generosity involves not only giving material resources but also offering emotional support, wisdom and time to those in need. The story of Imam Ali alayhi salam serves as a poignant example of this multifaceted generosity. And now he was known for his willingness to assist the poor, provide counsel to the distressed, and stand up for justice, often prioritizing the needs of others over his own. This illustrates that generosity is a reflection of one's character and a manifestation of divine love and mercy. It encourages individuals to cultivate a spirit of selflessness and to engage in acts of service that contribute to the welfare of the community. So, fostering a sense of unity and solidarity among all members of society. In conclusion, generosity is a core value within Islam, profoundly articulated through the teachings of the Holy Book of Quran and Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. Figures like Hatim al-Ta'i serve as timeless examples of this virtue, showcasing how true generosity transcends the mere act of giving. It embodies love, compassion, and a deep sense of social responsibility. The teachings of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam reinforce that generosity is not just an act but a way of being, an essential characteristic of a true believer. As Muslims, embodying this spirit of generosity not only strengthens our individual faith but also fosters a culture of compassion and mutual support within our community. Finally, the legacy of Hatim al-Ta'i and the teachings of the Islam remind us that acts of generosity can transform lives and create a more just and caring society. Okay, well, dear listeners, it seems that our time for this episode has come to its end. I really hope that you have enjoyed listening to this episode. And until another one, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Dear brother and sister, thank you very much for your company. This is the end of this episode of Lantern. Until a new story, fi aman Allah. Ala bi dhikri Allah taqma'innu al-qulub.
Welcome to the Israel Watch, which monitored Trump's threats to Iran and Tehran's response. The Israeli attacks on Syria, the continued missile launches from Yemen on the Israeli entity, as well as the expansion of the aggression on the Gaza Strip, and finally, internal Israeli divisions. We discuss these topics with Dr. Mohsen Saleh, president of the International Association of Political Experts. Hello and welcome, Dr. Mohsen.
Thank you. Hello.
In Hebrew media, there are those who do not want or who do not expect Trump to launch a military attack on Iran to protect Israelis due to the repercussions this would have on the U.S. economy. Dr. Mohsen, do you think that Israelis would actually launch an attack on Iran and then drag the United States into that war?
Not without the United States, or not without the approval of the United States, because we know that Israelis are afraid from the experience with Iran and with the the access of the resistance in the region. They are afraid from Yemen, they were afraid and still afraid from Lebanon and Syria and, of course, Gaza and the West Bank. So they calculated very well that Trump, if he doesn't go to launch an attack on Iran, then they will have to wait, especially in this amalgamation of the economic war against everybody, even against the consumers, of the American consumers. So we are talking about a new phase of the wars, especially in the economic aspect. Would the Americans and even the Arabs allow Trump to launch an attack on Iran at the time when they are having this feeling that all the oil fields in the Gulf would have a special attack to eliminate all the oil wells? I doubt it. Mm-hmm. So the Israelis are stuck.
So they would rather push the United States to actually launch that war, Dr. Mohsen.
And even they now, at this moment, I guess they don't have this opportunity because Iran and its power, and also
the Chinese are threatening of launching an attack.
They have been threatening for
and they have the capabilities
for decades. They have the capability of very on some spots, but you know that there are 18 places, 18 posts of the nuclear enrichment in many areas in Iran. So they can't damage the Iranian nuclear centrifuges unless they have something inside, which they lack. They don't have. So we are having this opportunity for Iran in order to impose some of the political agenda in the region, especially in Yemen and in Palestine, more than the Israelis. The Israelis are stuck, especially in Syria, especially in Lebanon. Ortegos and others who are reaching the region, they have no opportunity in order to find a peace settlement with the Palestinians and with the Lebanese. So we are having a lot of complications here and ramifications of all these talks, and they can't settle the issues unless the Russians and the Chinese come to the table, which is very far-fetched, let's to say.
Okay.
They can't do to that to that area.
To the Gaza Strip, where the bloody wide-scale Israeli aggression continues. The occupation is expanding into large areas inside the Strip, including taking control of the Murag axis south of Gaza and cutting the road between Rafah and Khan Yunis. Where is this Israeli aggression on Gaza heading towards, Dr. Mohsen, and what's the significance of occupying the Murag axis that separates Khan Yunis from Rafah?
Well, it's the whole issue, the whole spectrum of this attack on Gaza, and I would agree on this puzzlement of some of the journalists about the Netanyahu's plans in Gaza,
mm-hmm.
whether they want to put down Hamas, dismantle Hamas, and try to evacuate the Strip from Hamas and its power. But as far as they are negotiating with Hamas, and they are obliged to go to these negotiations with Hamas because of the hostages, I guess Hamas is in a good shape. And they have this power in order to impose some of the conditions against Netanyahu. Especially they are perplexed. They have this problem in trying to arrange the issue with Qatar, with Masa, with Egypt, and with Jordan.
Maybe they're only doing it because of the captives, not for any other reason, Dr.
Absolutely, yes. And they are trying to, of course, to evacuate. And this block and checkpoint and to separate Khan Yunis from Rafah in order to evacuate or find a way to the Palestinians.
As you were highlighting, divide and conquer.
Yes. And I guess the Palestinians are still stuck to Hamas's agenda. And they have to, because they have no other solutions, either to evacuate Gaza and leave Gaza, or to stick to the resistance, which Hamas is has been doing for 2 years after the 7th of October. And I guess Hamas, in spite of all these losses in martyrs and children, and of course with the buildings and casualties and injured people, and all these political media doing in their minds, in the minds of the Palestinians and the Arabs, but I guess the results won't be on the in the interests, in the Israeli interests,
okay, but however,
and the Americans as well. Let's be frank. Now the situation in Gaza, especially in Gaza and in the Arab world, it's not right away for the Israeli interest directly, because also they have this split and this division and this problem inside the Israeli
society. Okay, but do you think what's
Israeli
happening?
Society.
Okay, but
so
do you
the
think
consequences for the Palestinians are not more than what has happened.
Okay, though there is a mere media blackout for us to understand that vision. But however, do you think what's happening in Gaza will give full control for Netanyahu to actually control the Gaza Strip?
Absolutely not.
We're seeing massacres.
They could not. Still, there are missiles and rockets going from Gaza into the settlements. Still, the political situation, especially in the Arab world, they can't agree with Netanyahu to evacuate, and Trump to their plan to evacuate Gaza, in spite of all these problems and dangerous attacks against the civilians and the hospitals, of course. So we are having a kind of dilemma for both, for the Arabs and for the Israelis and the Americans. They are stuck in their plans, and there is no plan for uprooting, let's to say, the Palestinians, neither for the Palestinians in order to achieve an independent Gaza, regardless of the Arab opinion. So we are having such a dilemma, such a crisis, that we should calculate it anew, in order to give space for the resistance, in order to recollect its power and its plans inside Gaza and in other places. So we are having this this rest or this truce in order to recollect the power of these two teams, whether the Israelis and the Americans. And the Americans, they have problem with the world now, especially what I have mentioned about the economic situation. So we are in a state of limbo.
Okay.
We are in a state of limbo for everybody, for everybody,
however,
in Syria and in Lebanon.
Okay, now moving to the recent Israeli aggression on Syria, which targeted Damascus, Hama Airport, and other areas. Hebrew media confirmed it was an Israeli message to Turkey against setting up military bases or bringing weapons into Syria. Do you think that this aggression would actually bring up a new phase of confrontation between Turkey and Israel?
Well, in spite of all these statements of the foreign minister, of the Israeli foreign minister and the Turkish foreign minister, that they don't want any direct clashes with each other in Syria, especially in Syria, it seems that the situations and the expeditions, the Israeli expeditions, and of course the existence in Syria, of course the Turks have really, they have helped and they have toppled the Assad's regime, and they helped this Julani's team and their parties. I guess the situation is going to deteriorate, because the Israelis, they are afraid that, especially from the resistance in the southern part, to increase and to accelerate its actions.
So they are going to fight each other, Turkey and Israel?
They are fighting each other by indirectly. But will they go into war against each other in spite of all this situation, because they belong to the NATO? Of course, Israel is not a member in the NATO. The The Turks, of course, they are in the NATO and they are the second power in the NATO. But I guess
but
they
won't. But that's not enough reason
go.
For them not to actually go into war against each other, even if they are members of the NATO.
Yeah, but there is a situation where the Israelis have this limitations of movement against the Turks because they have other battlefields in Lebanon, in Gaza, and in Yemen as well. So,
what about the stance of the United States? Would the United States actually approve on that because they're both allies?
That's another problem. That's another problem. Probably Obama, he likes, as he said, he likes Erdogan. But at the same time,
Trump.
We have to see
Trump. Yes.
Yeah. We have to see the aftermath of the this war, economic war, and we have to see also the Turks' interests in Syria. Will the Turks allow the Israelis to invade till Damascus, and they will take the north, and they have to share
divide Syria. Okay.
To share Syria, okay. And they have.
You're speaking about an agreement here to avoid a war.
Well, let's
to
say a secret agreement.
Okay.
Well, covered agreement.
Yes, it's very important. It's very important. Yes, it's very important to actually listen to the Israeli social media. Israeli social media discussed the Israeli aggression on Syria. Here are some of the comments.
Nimrod Madar. The attack on the T4 airport, where the Turks attempted to establish a military base, is a correct and important step. Israel must make it clear to Turkey and to the Julani group that it will not accept Turkish presence on the land of our northern neighbor. We must actively work to enhance Israeli influence in Syria and push the Turks out of the area. Israeli-Kurdish Friendship Association. Israel will bomb any Turkish military base on Syrian territory and will not allow the establishment of Turkish bases there. Ilabi. To this day, Syria is still considered a sovereign state. Let's begin with that to conclude that Israeli action inside Syria constitutes a violation of international law. So good luck to our soldiers in The Hague.
Our time is up. Dr. Mohsen Saleh, President of the International Association of Political Experts, thank you for joining
thank
us.
Thank you.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamadi.
Islamadi.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Well, this is Arabic English Radio, and I am Asma. I'm very happy and honored to be here with you once more.
And this is Nahid being with you on this episode. Well, has it ever happened to you that you were determined to do something like me the other day? I was well determined to go for lots of plans that I had written from the night before.
The plans that we write and we never do.
And the next day I did nothing.
Yeah. You're actually picking the wrong one asking, has it ever? Yes, it has
because
happened to
when,
me.
Because when I see some people who are very disciplined and people who are good planners, I feel like it has never happened to them. They had plans, okay, they went for it, and here, see the conclusion.
Well, unfortunately, since I am in the phase that I have to write a thesis, I guess I'm traumatized enough to answering you in this way that, yes, sometimes I feel like I'm going through a mental shutdown.
What happens in this way? Like, what happens that we stop? We do nothing. I know that I have many things to do. I know about that damn planner and those things that I wrote in it.
Yeah, they don't work,
honestly. I know that it's being completed with all the plans I had since say 2 weeks ago, but still I'm not doing anything. I know, but I'm not doing anything.
Well, honestly speaking, those, I'm not a fan of those notebooks that tell you what to do, what not to do, and then planning, having too much of, you know,
they try to be helpful, but they can't.
I'm not a scaling person. Like, I can't be. When you create a plan for me, my brain tends to escape all those plans. I don't know why, but unintentionally, it just happens. Whenever I do not have a plan, I go way better.
Wow.
Yeah. So, in order just to talk about, dig deeper into what you are bringing up, there is, psychologically speaking, there is this term that's called functional freeze. You know, there are three different responses that our brain would go through in different occasions. I didn't know that, but it's very funny and interesting. It's fight, flight, and freeze.
Wow.
Now,
so nice.
Very.
Fight, flight, and freeze.
Yeah, it's a three response sort of, it's a triangle. One of them is flight, the other fight, and the third one is freeze. Flight, the response that goes like flight, is actually in the occasions when you want to actually go away and escape.
Mm-hmm.
When naturally, when your brain is facing something that is new to it, that is unfamiliar, as a result of that survival stuff that we have in ourselves, we want to keep in that comfort zone that we have always been.
We escape.
Like, not that we have always been and it's a real comfort zone. No, we are used to it. In order not to get out of that habitual, ordinary planning that we have, our brain tries to escape from it, not to get in. Like me at this occasion, my brain is not actually helping me get into writing my thesis. Though I know I do not have much of time. So this is the flight response. The other one is fight. Fight is when you do not accept something. Something happens to you. It's very difficult for you.
Yeah,
you're just rejecting it. The third phase, the third response is the freeze response.
Which is the easiest and sweetest.
I guess this one happens too much to too many people. It's the commoner, I guess, maybe. Or no, let me just say we get into the trap of the three of these responses. I have experienced all of them.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So in the freeze, this functional freeze is when you physically or mentally, you're not actually trying to do anything. Either your mind does not respond to anything. Like for hours, you sit in a corner doing nothing, though you know you have a lot of things to do. Your mind is not helping, is not cooperating. So it's like a mental shutdown, I call it, much easier way.
And you know what is happening to us right now?
Mm-hmm.
The other day I was thinking, what if this feeling of this procrastination that I am feeling right now, what if I experienced this like 5 or 7 years ago? I wouldn't have been the person I am right now.
Yeah,
at that time, at the time that we are young, the time that we are on the peak of being called youth.
The prime of our life.
Yeah, exactly. At that time, we cannot, it has too many results for us.
In the article was writing that you have seen the documentaries about the animals. In some occasions, animals fake being dead, you know?
Right, I've heard about
They fake death, and then this way they would avoid danger. The functional freeze is the same thing. Like your mind is actually faking shutdown to escape, to avoid the danger that it feels. Like maybe it's like writing a thesis is not a danger for me, but my mind taking it as a danger. That's why that works as a stimuli. And my mind's response and reaction to it is like faking death.
Maybe in the early stages, it will lead to the mental health, to the mental relief that there is no burden on you anymore. You're not pressurized.
Yeah.
But the point that I'm trying to make is that for young people, there should be a point at which they recognize this feeling. And it's really important and it's crucial to know that I have this feeling. Okay, it's normal and it's natural to some extent. But then I need to open my eyes, see what I am doing, And it turns to something unnatural.
I get what you're saying. Actually, this moment of recognition is the first point at solving anything.
Yeah, and changing. And changing. Developing.
So right now, we're just bringing it up. We try to recognize it first thing first, because it has happened many times to us, but maybe we did not know what it is called.
Right.
We were just searching for the reasons, and maybe deep down we know the reasons, but we just try to ignore it. Let's go for a break and then we come back.
I was too proud to see the truth and prostrate to you until I took the first step. And that's when you opened the doors for me. Now, alone, I realize what I was missing by being far from you.
Actually, there is a character in the book Gone with the Wind that is called Scarlet. She is actually the main heroine of that book. And then she had a motto for herself. Whenever she got into a difficult situation, she told herself that, okay, forget about it today. I would think about it tomorrow. This was her motto. I guess the same thing happens for the people who are responding to things with a functional freeze. Because I actually include myself in the number of people who are going through this mental response, we feel like it's better for us to ignore it and avoid it until a better time comes. But we forget about the fact that that better time that we are searching for, that we're waiting for, maybe would never come.
Right, and the same happens for the perfectionist. Mm-hmm. Like once
it starts with a perfectionist.
Yeah, I was going to just read a book, and then I decided, okay, at this time I'm busy. There's noise around me. Mm-hmm. Let's just read it another time with much focus, and then I went to highlight the important words. And still, till now, I haven't read that book.
It means bye bye. You're not going to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
So also the perfectionism is another factor which leads to procrastination. Mm-hmm. And then the functional freeze.
Yeah, that's very true. You see, I have learned one thing in my life, and that's, unfortunately, I'm not in the best time of my life to give recommendations to anyone, but previously I used to be a better person. I used to seize the moments. I used to be a person who goes for every opportunity that gets into her, like every minute. But right now, you see, let's put it this way. Sometimes, as a result of getting too much occupied with too many things, your brain would feel tired. Out of this being so much tired, it would react to things in this way that, okay, I'm dead. Do not count on me. This is that's happening. In these occasions, I feel like this response, as I just told you, is very natural. The thing that is not natural is to continue with it, is to let it devour you.
And there are many strategies with which we can cope this feeling. For example, something that has worked for me when I was going to university and I had lots of things, I used to exaggerate. Like, oh, you have a book, 100 pages, and you have to study and know it all. So then, at some stages, I realized that I'm not doing anything. So the way I tried to handle this problem was setting smaller goals.
Yeah, chunk by chunk.
Yeah, for today, only like 10 pages will be enough.
If it's a mouthful, according to your brain, try to make it chunk by chunk.
Yeah, when we just make smaller goals and set them and know that it is not a burden anymore, it will take 1 hour. It will take 30 minutes.
First technique is do not exaggerate and try to take tiny baby steps.
And I think even before that, the first stage is a recognition, knowing that you need to change, making the decision, being that mindful that I know this is happening to me. It is not something unnatural. I'm not the worst.
Yeah.
But then after this recognition, we can make the decision to change it and be determined.
Yeah.
This is IRIU Jewish Radio. You are listening to Youth Station.
We actually drew some attentions to the reasons. One of the reasons are traumas. Like, for example, you are scared of something as a result of an experience you had in your childhood or, I don't know, years ago. Then when it keeps repeating itself, because, you know, this is how trauma works. Right. Trauma keeps repeating itself to you in everything that happens around you. When it repeats itself, the thing that happens is that your brain is going to respond to it in one of these three ways. And one of them is that this freeze that we just talked about. So in order to solve that trauma, you alone maybe cannot be able to do anything for it.
Of course,
Islamically speaking, from the narrations and from the perspective of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, everything is going to be solved by consulting a scholar based on Islamic actually perspective. And there are actually many psychologists. It's very interesting to know that in our country there are many psychologists who work based on both the knowledge that comes out of psychology,
right,
and the knowledge that comes, the knowledge of soul and psychology that comes out of the words of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, and also the Holy Book of Quran. I guess these sort of psychologists and therapists are the best helpers for people who are suffering from these responses that have gone for too long.
Yeah, of course. These professionals, and this is one of the advantages of living in a Muslim community.
Exactly.
Living in this society, going for therapists, it's okay. I mean, even talking to them, asking for advice, some people still, unfortunately, they are rare.
Prefer to start from this point that I have to ask God to help me.
Right.
Personally, this is the first step that I would take after I realize that I'm actually suffering. But then aside from that, also reciting the Holy Book of Quran can help you so much. There are many people that when they are dealing with a problem, a mental problem like this, they would rather to go to nature, like hearing the sound of rain, for example, or the water, the lakes, anything can help you. Even the, okay, if you do not have access to, I don't know, lake, ocean, anything, then there are leaves of trees. If you sit, even if you gaze at the sky for some moments. So this was all for today, I guess. We do not have much more of time. But then just to conclude it, sometimes the situation gets so weird and so difficult and so complicated. The thing that you have to do is to never give up and to never feel hopeless. Hope is the last thing that dies. So get into this idea you have got in your own side, so he would help you to figure out everything.
And with all the wishes of hopefulness, let's end today's episode. Until another time, assalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that, inshallah, in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of RIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Mahdi Rastani.
Tonight we want to delve into and learn from our first imam what it means to be compassionate, what it means to be kind, and have a master class on the compassion and the mercy of our beloved first imam. There are times in life you plan out everything, and then things don't go as planned. And then when things don't go as planned, there are people who will step up. They will immediately say, yes, I know the food is late here. You can take from our food. I know this didn't work out the way it worked out. You can go and rest in our room. This person who steps forward, huh? This is how Ali was. The narration says the Battle of Jamal came to an end. The Battle of Jamal was a very lucrative one for Ali, because on the other side, the battlefield happened very quickly. It happened in one day and it was over. And because of that, the money that Talha and Zubair had in Basra and all of that, it immediately came into the hands of Ali. So the narration says he took all of this wealth, he started to divide it amongst the thousands of soldiers that he had. And to each person came 500 dirhams. Yes, 500 dirhamin. And to himself, 500 dirhams too. Okay, great. So Ali is going to go back home. Now, this is the justice of Ali. We already discussed this last night. Yes, this is justice. 500 coins for me and 500 for the rest. This is already groundbreaking. If you're the commander and the ruler and all of this kind. But Ali went further. Someone came at the very end. All the division is done. Someone came at the end. He said, Ya Ali, I wanted to make it to the battlefield, but I couldn't. Something came up. Something held me back. I couldn't make it. But all the wealth is already divided. So what did Ali do? Ali said, yes, come and take my 500 dirhams. You go walk away. Now I ask you, when things don't go well in our houses, you go on that vacation, you go on that trip, whatever the case might be, are you the one who steps up? You can have your Dhulfaqar chain, and you can have your Dhulfaqar tattoo, and you can have your 313 and your bio too. It's all cool and fine. But my question is, when things don't go well, do you stand up first and say, yes, take my food, you can take this, I'll stay up a little bit long. Are you the one who steps ahead? Because that's who Ali was. This is what we have to learn from Ali. The third level of the compassion of Ali is what? When things don't go well, when things don't go as planned, he is the one who steps up. The fourth compassion of Ali, Ali's compassion, the characteristic that it had, was that he would give quickly. Some of us, when we want to give, it takes us years. Let me see if this $5, if I need it, I don't need it. Maybe my grandchild will need it. Maybe I have to put it into an account for the next generation. And Ali used to give quickly. And the narrations tell us, when you want to do good, you have to do it quickly. Now, yes, sometimes there's life-altering decisions, and you want to give this huge amount, or you want to make a big change in your life. You should take your time to think about these things, yes? But small things here or there, you do it quickly. You don't hold on to it, because the narration says, the more you hold on to it, the more you give shaitan that time to come and talk to you, and all of a sudden the $20 becomes $10 and $5 and it becomes $4.30. So the narration says the Prophet got this wealth from some of the battles. He divided it amongst his people. And to Ali came a small piece of land. So Ali, being the one who he is, the zuhd that he has, he didn't use the land for himself. But then he started to produce wealth through that land. And he started to dig. And they saw Ali is working hard under the sun. Everyone else at home relaxing. And Ali is working hard under the sun. And he's digging. Ya Ali, why are you digging? He's looking for water. Because if you strike water in the land of Arabia, this is a very scarce commodity. And he's digging and he's digging. And all of a sudden, struck water. The narration says the water gushed out of the ground. And they called it Yambu' because of how high it gushed out of the ground. And people walked by Ali. And they said, Ya Ali, congratulations, you struck gold now. You struck water, scarce commodity. And Ali said, you don't have to congratulate me. He said, go and congratulate the one who owns it. فَإِنَّهُ صَدَقَةٌ. I already gave it away. He said, فَإِنَّهُ صَدَقَةٌ. Ya Ali, congratulations. I already gave it away. And in some narration says, he immediately grabbed a pen and a paper and he wrote that this is for those who are on their way to go and do Hajj, or on their way to go and worship Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. On their way, when they come here, they will benefit from this well, and no one has the right to close off this well forever. This is the concept of waqf. Ali gives quickly. This is number four. Number five, these are levels of the compassion that you and I now may not necessarily experience. But this is because Ali is that North Star. He has to set the standard so that thousands of years later, when I sacrifice for the faith, you sacrifice for the faith, you don't go home saying, oh my God, my sacrifice was something else. No, you look at Ali's sacrifice and then you laugh at your own sacrifice. Even if your sacrifice is big in and of itself, huh? Then you laugh at your own sacrifice. What did I do? What did Ali do? This fifth one is when Ali used to give from what he needed himself. This one Ahlul Bayt don't necessarily expect from us because they know it's too difficult from us. You can give from extra. That's what Ahlul Bayt expect from us. From that which you need, the bare necessities that you have in your own life, Ahlul Bayt don't expect us to do this, but this is how they were. They themselves, this is exactly how they were. So the narration says the Prophet called out, maybe in his masjid, this poor person came, said, I need help. The Prophet sent to his own houses, to the houses of his wives. They all came back, they said, we have nothing in the house except for water. There's nothing. So we can't help this person. So the Prophet called out, he said, مَنْ لِهَذَا الرَّجُولِ. Who's going to help this man? By himself, nobody else is going to help him. So Ali said, أَنَا لَهُ يَا رَسُولَ اللَّهِ. I'll take care of him. So he head home. And on his way home, when he knocked the door and he came to Fatima, salawatullahi wasalamuhu alayha, he said, Yabnata Rasulillah, O daughter of the Messenger of God. We have someone who's hungry. What do we have in this house? Fatima said, Ya Ali, we have nothing in this house. There's no food. Except there's one small meal, and that is for our sabiyya. That is for our little child. And Fatima said, وَلَكِنْ نُؤْثِرُ ضَيْفَنَا. But we'll figure out something. We'll prefer our guests. We'll figure out something. We'll do something. Ali brought the guests. Ali said, Fatima, go put the child to bed early tonight. He'll be asleep. And you all know when children sleep, they sleep until the next morning. He said, put the child to sleep. And when I come home, turn off all the lights. And I will tell my guest, everyone already done. Everyone is sleeping now. So you eat from this food that you have, and then you sleep. And the narration says the next day the Prophet heard about this. He said, Ali, you're an example of those that the Quran says in Surah Al-Hash, verse 9, وَيُؤْثِرُونَ عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِهِمْ وَلَوْ كَانَ بِهِمْ خَصَاصَةً. They give even when they are deeply in need themselves. You and I don't understand this level of compassion. This is the level of compassion you and I maybe may not ever experience in our lives.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Rahim Kareem Azim Alim Halim Hakim Mateen.
From Sana'a. Welcome to your window into the latest developments out of Sana'a, Yemen. I am Yusuf Mari. And in this program, we will be discussing all of the latest events unfolding in the country, from the U.S. airstrikes that has lasted for 4 weeks to Yemen's retaliatory attacks targeting U.S.S. Harry Truman aircraft carrier in the Red Sea, along with other U.S. military manifestations, including warships and also supply ships. Also, the Yemeni army has also targeted military sites in occupied Palestine. We will be discussing this and much more. Joining me today is Dr. Ali Muhammad Al-Sabri. He is a professor at the Sana'a University, and he is also a political expert. Doctor, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
I'd like to start by first asking you, it's been 4 weeks since Trump launched this military campaign. His declared goals were to decimate who he calls the Houthi military capability. Has he achieved any of the goals that he first declared at the beginning of these military operations?
No, nothing has been achieved because Trump has, of course, announced something ambiguous, and that is not clear to the people, the aim that he is fighting the Yemeni citizens. Now, what we see just in various areas and governorates, and the air raids by the U.S. air jets, that they are just affecting the situation of the Yemenis. So even the embargo or the siege or the blockade, it's not against any party in the country. It is against the citizens. It is the civilians of this country. So the goal that he wants to, as maybe called that, to affect the Houthis, We haven't seen anything in that, because the Houthis who called, they are part of the country. They are also citizens. And the capabilities that he is wishing to get, he will not get anything. Why? Because the Ansarillah and the Houthis, they are in support for the Palestinian people in Gaza Strip and all Palestine. So Trump has claimed earlier that he would be a peaceful man, he would spread peace, and he does not like wars. So now he's lying again. He changed everything. He starts now with the customs tariffs, so he creating wars throughout the world for nothing. So it's not only Yemen. Now the Yemenis, they are so resilient and they are steadfast against any aggression, and they are with the Palestinians. They are supporting those innocent women and children in Palestine. So why the United States is just supporting Israel? And it has now recently sent the THAAD and the Patriot, also defense equipment, for Israel. And they do not see that the Palestinians without food, without electricity, without water. So they're creating starvation in Gaza. And he's supporting those killers and murderers. And in Yemen, he's doing the same, because the Yemenis are also civilians and they do not go to the United States to fight it. Nobody is fighting any country. This is a peaceful country. We are calling for peace. And we support our brothers because we have one religion. And we have, it is a feeling of like a humanity. This is a humanitarian feeling. So they cut the humanitarian aid and they stopped even the ceasefire in Palestine. And they resumed now the fighting for almost now a month and so. And in Yemen, they are losing everything, because their reputation is nothing. They are fighting a country which is so far, it's not affecting or making any dangers or risks to the United States. And this is again what we see in this country, that we have the heroes of the Yemeni armed forces. They are clashing in the sea, in the Red Sea, and because it's not only America. They claimed and they announced from the beginning that they are fighting and making the stop for the vessels that go to Israel, because they want to participate with their brothers in Palestine, at least to say what we have to do to prevent the goods and also whatever they have through the sea to Israel and to the occupied land. Now, this is the Yemeni, at least now, slogan. And this is what we want to do, to defend the Yemenis and to defend the Palestinians, because we are in one boat. So the other Arab countries these days, all right, we have some Arab countries now, they make demonstrations. Algeria now showed also demonstrations in the streets. Libya has also demonstrations. Also in Jordan and different Arab countries, even in Mauritania. So the Arab people, they are feeling that this war is against them all, because it's against Islam. Oh, they want to get rid of all the Islam, not only from Palestine, but from the Arab world and the Islam countries.
Of course they know, especially in recent years, I think it's become very clear that out of the Muslim world, they know that Israel, that the Israeli regime is hell-bent on destroying their countries.
Yes.
I think people know that, and I think not just Muslims know this. I think even the larger Western audience, they know who the good side and the bad side in this conflict. One side is committing genocide, the other side is trying to stop the genocide from happening. I think the large portion or the majority of the world, they know who's on the righteous side and who's trying to spread chaos and massacre.
Yes,
they know, but the reason why I bring this up is because I don't think it's just enough to have international condemnation. You mentioned the protests that are taking place worldwide. Today and in the next couple of days, there's going to be protests staged across the world. But we have to be honest and say that these protests haven't really achieved the main goal of bringing an end to the genocide or stopping Israel dead in its tracks, which is why Yemen plays such a pivotal role, because it's not just the protests that are taking place in Yemen. It's not just the condemnations that are coming from Yemeni leaders. It's the actual military activities, military escalations, military preparations, military attacks that Yemen is determined and committed to in order to bring an end to the genocide taking place in Palestine.
Yes. You see, the Yemen stance is with the Palestinians. It's a supportive stance. That means what we are watching every day in Palestine, now since 18 months, it's 1.5 years, killing the Palestinians in every day. That's on a daily basis, with the aircrafts, with the drones, bombardment, and with the demolition to the houses, destruction, and the streets, and everything. So they make this life there as a miserable life. And there was an agreement, and the mediators that they have reached with the Hamas movement, that there will be, of course, phases. So for 42 days, until some of the Israelis who were the prisoners were released, and then waiting for the second phase. But Netanyahu rejected everything, and he is going with the plan of Trump, because Trump wants to get money from anywhere, because he wanted to buy Gaza. He wanted to make skyscrapers in Gaza. He created a new world over there, and he will expel all the Palestinians for nothing. Now, what is he doing now? He finds another problem for the world. The problem is now is the customs tariff. Customs tariff not only for, you see, one country. It's for all countries. For all countries. Now, the French country and even those who they are against the United States. Now, he wanted in that to gain money. So Trump is a trader. He is, as we say, a state, as it's we know from the beginning, that he wanted to make money out of everything, not even to make any interest for the people. His own people in the United States are demonstrating against his plans.
And he's losing money. You mentioned that Trump, he prides himself on making money, bringing in money. Now he's losing money with the war on Yemen. According to U.S. officials and U.S. reports, the military campaign on Yemen has cost the U.S. over $1 billion.
Let me tell you one thing, Mr. Yusuf Fadak. Now, he depends now on the visit to the Gulf countries and to Saudi Arabia, because he wanted to say that he defended them. So he's going to take the money from them. He's a trader. He's, as they say, a real estate contractor, and he is trying to find money from any place. Now he will suck with China. China, they are clever people. They are very peaceful people. And now he imposed on them about 64% for this custom tariff. China rejected that, and they also responded in 35% in the customs tariff right. to the China. Now, what he wanted to do to create jobs in the United States and to find the factories that has been already lost, and he wanted to make new competition for the United States. So this man is lost. He doesn't have anything in his mind. He is just in a marriage with Netanyahu, and both people, they are criminals. They do not have any plan for any constructive planning in the world. They don't need anything to say. Even the kid, when he looks at those people, they're crazy people. Look what he did to the Ukrainian president, as they were giving billions to him to fight Russia. And at the end, he humiliated him at his office in the White House. So this is this man.
So you're saying it's a reckless
values. He doesn't have values and respect to himself and to the others.
So from what you're saying is, the Trump administration is acting recklessly without actually getting the right advice.
Yes.
Because when you take into consideration the war that they launched on Yemen, let's talk about what they've targeted so far. We've seen them target cotton fields, cotton factories, steel factories.
Yes.
They're targeting power transmission towers. Yes. They're targeting energy sources. They're targeting the port of Hodeidah. They're even targeting solar panels. What does this tell you about, does Trump know what he's doing in Yemen, or is he just enacting upon an Israeli policy to spread chaos and destruction across the Muslim world?
Exactly. This is what we can see. And the destruction of a health center in Mashhad, that is in Hajja area.
Right.
What is the purpose of destroying just a health center for the rural areas? And if those people are having this, as we say, long-range missiles, what do they have?